This is program C1136. I welcome you to another week of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. Before we get started in the book of Revelation today, I want to remind you we have 154 days left until we fly off to Israel. Everything you need to know about this very well-arranged and very economical trip is right there on the website, intotheword.net. Just look for the hot link on the front page. Get that information under your belt and then make your choice to come with us. And please bring your preacher with you. We'd love to have a whole trip full of preachers that'll come back excited about their experience in the Holy Land that they preach about all the time. Let's go ahead and turn our attention to our study in the book of Revelation. We are currently using my notes for Living in the Last Days Prophecy Seminar. You can find those on the website as well, intotheword.net. Look in the PDF resources section. I'm looking at page number 71, and we are going to kind of roll back where we ended last week so that we can get kind of the context that I'm talking to you about here. We've already discussed the 3.5-year period, how it kicks off with great chaotic events as the breaking of the sixth seal takes place. The sun goes dark, the moon goes blood red, the stars are falling from the sky. At least some of those stars appear to be angelic beings that have been kicked out of the supernatural realm. They are the fallen angels, Satan and his angels, kicked out by Michael into this short period of time where he is going to try to fight against the coming King of Kings and Lord of Lords by utilizing human agents and human agencies. Now, while all that's going on, we've also got the two witnesses, the two prophets of God that are doing their ministry. And that's how the 3.5 years kicks off. We were introduced to 144,000 individuals. They are young men, apparently. They're virgins. And my suggestion to you is that these are going to be martyrs, the first fruits of those that will die for their faith in this 3.5-year period. In fact, I believe they're kind of a countdown clock, that once the last of them are dead, that's when the wrath of God begins. Now, before the wrath of God begins, we're going to have the beast government, the beast leader, and his false prophet, all of them working on behalf of Satan, the dragon, try to force people to take a mark that represents the beast leader, his name, the number of his name, all of that'll make sense at the time, and to have this mark or they can't participate in the economy of this final beast government. I've suggested you to that this has got something to do with a loyalty because it's couched in the terms of worship of the beast leader. And more than likely, they are going to be carrying out this idea that planet Earth needs to barricade itself, come under one government against this entity that's showing up in a few more years. Now, from our standpoint, that is Jesus. But from their standpoint, they see it as an enemy that they have to barricade planet Earth against. And so the beast government and the mark of the beast, all of that, gets put into place, and that's when God starts giving out warnings. You don't want to participate in this blasphemy. So let's look at Revelation chapter 14, verse 6 again. This is the first of three, what I call, public service announcements given by God through his angels to the people of planet Earth as the beast government starts spinning up the mark of the beast system. And this is what it says. I saw another angel flying in mid-heaven with an eternal proclamation to proclaim to those sitting upon the earth, every nation, tribe, language, and people. So this is pan-cultural, pan-ethnic. It goes across every people group on planet Earth. Saying in a loud voice, fear God and give Him glory, because the hour of His judgment has come. Worship the one who made the sky, land, sea, and the springs of water. So this is a warning from the Creator. You need to worship not the beast leader, but the true and living God, the Creator of all things. And I wonder, honestly, whether or not the comment here of worship the true Creator is tied in with perhaps the false narrative that the dragon, that is Satan, and his fallen angels might have, that they are the true creators of humanity. And so that's showing up more and more in New Age writings, that these alien beings, these spirit beings in other dimensions, that they're the ones that actually had a hand in the creation of humanity rather than the God of the Jews and the Christians. And I find that as a plausible reason for this warning here. Public service announcement number 2 is started in verse number 8 of chapter 14. Another second angel followed, saying, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, she who has made all the nations drink the wine of her passionate prostitution." Now that should immediately be paralleled, I think, with the wording of Revelation chapter 18, where some of these same phrases appear. Let me read it to you. "After this, I saw another angel having come down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illumined by his glory. He cried out in a loud voice, saying, 'Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a dwelling for demons, a haven for every unclean spirit, every unclean bird, every unclean hated beast.'" That's some good Old Testament phraseology that indicates a sinful place. Verse 3, "Because all the nations have drunk of the wine of her passionate prostitution." That's the exact phrases from chapter 14, verse 8. And the kings of the earth had fornicated with her. The merchants of the earth have become rich from the power of her wantonness. And so we have this false leadership. And I believe it's probably a spiritual leadership, because this is the woman riding on the back of the government beast. And I've suggested that clearly she is the opposite of the woman of chapter 12, the righteous and faithful following woman who gave birth to the Messiah, brought about the promise, and who is currently, as we read these words, being protected by the two wings of the eagle in a place in the wilderness for 1,260 days. And I believe that's the two witnesses that are taking good care of her. But this is false religion. And I've suggested to you very strongly, it is my speculation as a passionate Protestant that who has no belief that the Bishop of Rome has any authority over Christianity, that this woman here in the last 3.5 years is probably the leadership of the Roman Catholic hierarchy, particularly the Bishop of Rome. And I believe the Bishop of Rome is probably also going to be the false prophet at this time. So we have a message from God. Here's more of the public service announcement in verse 4 of chapter 18. "I heard another voice from heaven saying, 'Come out, my people, out from her, so that you might not share in her sin, so that you might not receive of her blows, because her sins are cemented together as far as heaven. And God kept account of her unrighteous acts. Give her, even as she has given, give her 2 times what her acts deserve. In the cup she mixed, mix her two times as much, inasmuch as she glorified herself and lived wantonly. In the same way, give her torture and mourning, because she is saying in her heart, I'm sitting as a queen. I'm not a widow. I will never see mourning. So God warns anyone that even has the slightest bit of affinity for him. You've got to come out from this false faith. You've got to come out of this false woman's leadership, because she's about to get smacked down. She is about to receive the judgment of God. Now, that judgment is going to come at the hands, ironically, of the beast leader and his beast government. How do we know that? Because it says it right here in verse number 8, which will be paralleled in Revelation 17. It says, therefore, in one day her blows will come, death, mourning, and famine. She will be burnt with fire, because the Lord God who judges her is strong. So her judgment is going to come from God, but it's going to be carried out by the hands of the beast leader and his government. Revelation chapter 17. This is verse number 16. This is the passage that we went through that helped us decode the beast government and the woman. And it says, the 10 horns that you saw, and the beast will hate the prostitute, making her desolate and naked, eat her flesh and burn her with fire, for God has placed into their hearts to carry out his purpose, to accomplish one purpose, to give their kingdom to the beast until the word of God shall be completed. So the 10 horns here are the 10 kings that come up out of the chaos. They reformulate government right after everything falls apart at the beginning of the 3.5 years. And then the 11th horn, which would be the beast leader himself, he utilizes 3 of these horns to come to power. And so he comes the leader over the 10. And so all 11 of them, once they have used the woman to help consolidate their power, they see no more need for her. And they do away with her. And this is my very strongly held belief. And again, keep in mind, this is speculation. So this is not thus saith the Lord. This is what Thomas is suggesting. And I'm always interested in feedback and anything that you might have to say on this topic. But my conviction is that when Satan sees that he can't do away with the woman over at Jerusalem, that is, the woman's being protected by the 2 witnesses, he heads off to, more than likely, Europe, where he can utilize the Roman Catholic Church, led by a rebel pope, to consolidate his power over at least half of the world's remaining population. And why do I say that? Because there are 1.3 billion Roman Catholics in the world. A lot of them live in Europe itself. A lot of them in Italy in particular. But the Pope is also recognized as a spiritual leader of Christians on earth by the many millions, and actually it's very close to 1 billion, I think, is this, of the various strains of Orthodox and liberal denominational world Christians. And so I think his leadership, his speaking up on behalf of the final world ruler, this final beast leader, will convince a lot of them to go along with his plan. But once the false prophet and the beast leader come up with this plan that everybody gets this mark of the beast and participates in their system, that will be control enough. They will no longer need any type of religious control system. And I think that is when they will decide to do away with the Vatican and actually do away with pretty much the power base around Rome itself. It's likely, I think, since we see here the code words, Mystery Babylon, that the city of Rome, and those were the words used in the New Testament to describe Rome, was Babylon. Peter says when he's in Rome, she who's in Babylon greets you. The city of Rome could very easily be the headquarters of the revived Roman Empire. That would make perfectly good sense to me. But once they've got the other system, why bother? I'm going to continue making my suggestions and speculations. I think the long-term plan that these guys will have is to move their headquarters closer to Jerusalem, because that's their ultimate place that they want to take over. And one of the places that would be strategic as well as historically significant would be ancient Babylon. And so I think that they are going to move their operations to the Middle East, to the site of ancient Babylon. And once they've abandoned Mystery Babylon, they'll kill it. They'll destroy it. And that's really kind of what comes up with the burning of the fire. I also believe that there might be this element, and that is when the beast leader and the false prophet makes this ultimatum, take the mark or die. I think that's going to be more than what an awful lot of Catholics can handle. More than what an awful lot of Orthodox people can handle. Because they will see that as an insistence that they worship the beast leader, and they won't go along with that. And I think that's another reason why they might destroy the city of Rome, because they see it as a potential hotbed of unrest by those that refuse to sign on with the program. So Revelation chapter 18 goes on, verse number 9. The kings of the earth, those fornicating and living luxuriously with her, will weep and will strike themselves in grief over her when they see the smoke of her burning. They will stand at a distance in fear of her torture, saying, "Woe, woe, the great city, the strong city Babylon, in 1 hour her judgment came." So they are going to grieve, many of them, over the loss of the revived city of Rome in this beast leader government, because it was the city's, it was the new center of commerce and everything like that. And now it's going to be gone. And I think that's what Revelation 18 is about. Verse 11, the merchants of the earth will weep and will mourn over her, because no one buys their merchandise anymore, merchandise of gold, silver, precious stones, pearls, fine linen, purple fabric, silk, scarlet fabric, every kind of fragrant wood, every sort of ivory container, every type of vessel made of silk, scarlet fabric, precious wood, copper, iron, marble, cinnamon, incense, myrrh, frankincense, wine, olive oil, fine wheat flour, wheat, work animals, sheep, horses, carts, the bodies of souls and men. This is a description, even in John's day, of what a major city would consume as it carried out its extravagant lifestyle. The fruit of the desires of your soul went from you, and all the dainty things and elegant things destroyed from you. None of these things shall be found. These wealthy merchants will stand at a distance from her due to fear of her tortures, weeping and mourning. See, they will get probably word, don't go anywhere near it, we're going to destroy it. When the beast government decides to do in Rome, they will probably wave off anyone that might be thinking about continuing their relationship with a now defunct capital. And they will be saying, "Woe, woe, the great city, the one wrapped in fine linen, purple and scarlet, gilded with gold, precious stones and pearls. In 1 hour, the great wealth is desolated. Each ship captain, each passenger and sailor, and as many as worked the sea, stood far off and were crying out, seeing the smoke of her fire, saying, "Who is like the great city?" They threw dust on their heads and were crying out, weeping and striking themselves, "Woe, woe, the great city, by whom all those having ships in the sea became rich from her excellence. In 1 hour she is desolated." So you almost get the impression that this is the center of a revived economy, and now it's suddenly gone. Verse 20, "Be glad over her, heaven, saints, apostles, and prophets. God has judged your judgment upon her." And a strong angel took up stone like a great millstone and threw it in the sea, saying, "In this violent fashion the great city Babylon shall be thrown and be found no more. May the sound of lyre players, musicians, flutists, trumpeters no longer be heard in you. May each artisan and each craftsman no longer be found in you. May the sound of the mill no longer be heard in you. May the light of the lamp no longer be seen in you. May the sound of the groom and the bride never be heard in you. Because your merchants were the great men of the earth, because you misled all the nations by your sorcery. In you was found the blood of the prophets, saints, and all those slaughtered on the earth." And a lot of that goes back again to my thesis that the Roman Catholic hierarchy, led by the Bishop of Rome, was one of the greatest persecutors of Bible-believing Christians throughout the ages. And now that judgment has come upon the city of Rome. Let's shift back over to Revelation 14, verse 9 now, where we were reading the public service announcements given by God through his angels to the people on earth who are thinking about taking the mark, thinking about joining forces with the beast leader, worshiping him, and following the leadership of the false prophet. Here is a very clear warning. Revelation 14, 9. "Another, third angel followed them, saying in a loud voice, 'If anyone worships the beast and his image and takes the mark upon his forehead or his right hand, he will drink the wrath of God's passion, which has been mixed undiluted in the cup of his wrath, and he will be tortured in fire and brimstone before the angels and before the Lamb. The smoke of their torture ascends into the ages of ages, and they have no respite day and night, the ones worshiping the beast in his image, and anyone accepting the mark of his name.'" Now that's about as plain as can be. You take the mark voluntarily, you are done for eternity. You are condemned to hell. There is no repentance coming back from this. Why? Because you have been given a very direct, clear warning from God himself. You take it, you're done. And I want to be exceptionally clear on this. Let's first of all deal with the idea that the mark of the beast does not exist at the current time in history. The mark of the beast does not come into existence until during the 3.5-year period. It is put in place by the false prophet in support of the false leader, the beast leader. Until those guys come on the scene, it is impossible for the mark of the beast system to exist. So I know some people get all worked up and worried about electronic devices and things like that, and identity controls and spying by the government. I understand all that. None of that, though, is the mark of the beast. Some of that technology could be used later in the mark of the beast, but itself right now is not. So don't get too worried about it. Point number two, you cannot take the beast or the beast accidentally. It will be exceptionally clear. Like I said, it won't be introduced until the 3.5-year period is in full swing. The one side will make it very clear. You have to take it if you want to participate in the economy. It is part of your worship and homage to the beast leader. And if you don't take it, you will die. So that side's going to make it very clear. And then you will have these announcements from God through his angels saying, "This is the mark of the beast. don't take it. You take it, you're done for eternity. So there's no way in the world you're going to be able to take it accidentally. Some people worry, well, what if they take our kids and take our babies and put them in there? Is that going to condemn them? No, because they did not take them voluntarily. If these guys tackle you, strap you down, and jam this mark into you, you did not take it voluntarily. Now, the first chance you get, I'd want it out of my body. I know that. Now, I would certainly try it, and it gives a whole new meaning to where Jesus said, if your right hand offend you, cut it off and throw it from you. Just saying. But you can't take it accidentally, folks. It's not possible. And then finally, something I've already said, but I want to reemphasize it. If you take it, you're done. There shouldn't be any of this nonsense of thinking, well, I'll take it just so that they'll leave me alone, but in my mind, I will reject the idea. I will refuse to worship the beast. It doesn't work that way, folks. Remember what Jesus said. Memorize these words and keep them close to your heart. This is Matthew 10, 32 and 33. The one who confesses my name or me before men, him will I confess before my Father in heaven. But he who denies me before men, him will I deny before my Father in heaven. If you take the mark, you're denying Jesus. You're not standing up for the name. You take the mark, even if you think you're taking it some sort of covert rejection of the idea behind it, you're still done for eternity. Take the mark. You are a rebel against God. Well, we're pretty much out of time for today. We'll come back a little bit more on this topic tomorrow when we're back into the Word.